This podcast is supported by Sobi, but please be aware that the opinions, recommendations and views are based on personal and independent experiences on living with haemophilia. Medical decisions are always to be discussed with a healthcare professional.
Hello and welcome to Rich, Paul and Axel's podcast. To introduce ourselves, I'm Rich, I'm from England and I have severe haemophilia A.
Hello, I'm Paul.
And I'm Axel. I'm the wife of Paul. We are both French and the parents of a young kid of 3 years old with severe haemophilia A.
Today we'll be discussing optimization of haemophilia care and sharing our knowledge and experiences for the community.
So, Paul and Axel, what was the focus of your initial discussions with your haemophilia care team following Leonard's diagnosis?
We had a lot of discussion with the medical team about medical stuff, and they were super precise, and we learned a lot of things about haemophilia because for me it was like a new world. We had a kind of a lack of content, and I mean a personal content, how where our life will be after this diagnosis. And they were super nice with Paul and me. I mean, they couldn't tell us what we are gonna live there, because every child and every person have a different haemophilia, so we couldn't project anything, so we are still learning. Most of our discussions were about medical stuff.
So that was really one of the big struggle, and that's also one of the key motivator for us to get involved with the community, is to try and find solutions for the parents that will follow, and to give them some kind of tips and maybe a little bit of hope about where it will go.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I really liked how Axel described it. You know, everyone's haemophilia journey is very individual and unique, because I think that's so true. And I guess that makes it very hard to try and understand how your journey might play out at the start. But I think, yeah, like you were saying, Paul, the haemophilia is so much more than just bleeding. It affects so many other aspects of people's lives. That kind of stuff needs to be upfront from the start as well. At that kind of initial stage of diagnosis, what else would have been helpful in terms of support from your haemophilia team?
Yeah, it would be...
Role model?
Yeah, example. Discuss with other families, see or read different experiences, to have like a kind of projection.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess, yeah, I fit into that category just about. So, I mean, you know, if we'd known each other then, like, I guess, what kind of questions would you have had for me?
Can you travel? Can you do sports? How do you feel? Do you have pain? Are you happy? Are you in couple? Is that a trouble? A lot of questions. I can go.
Don't start her, Rich.
So I guess it's just like, yeah, there's aspects of normal everyday life that the doctors don't talk about, because they're just, you know, focused on optimizing bleeding and controlling bleeding, and they don't think about how that affects everyday life, or maybe they just presume it doesn't.
Again, I think the word role model is perhaps not the right one, but maybe some mentoring, to try and hear a voice that is less about how do you treat haemophilia, but how do you live with it.
Yeah, that's a really beautiful way of putting it, I think. Yeah. The language of the doctors is always focused on controlling it or treating it or managing it. And actually, like you said, it's about how you live with it, because it is just a part of life. It isn't this kind of huge other thing. It's just, like, for me, my haemophilia is just part of who I am. Like, I can't separate it. I don't know any different. Like, when people ask me, what is it like to have haemophilia? Well, I don't know what it's like not to have haemophilia. Like, I've never known anything different. This is just who I am. Like, I don't see it as abnormal. Like, it's just a fundamental way, my way of life. And I don't see that as being a negative thing. Like, it's just, you know, an aspect of who I am, and I'm able to live my life with it. in ways that I don't think necessarily limit me. Growing up, like I never knew anyone else with haemophilia. It's only really, I guess, more recently, with like the internet and social media and things like that, that I've kind of started to connect to other people with haemophilia. And it's so empowering to learn from other people's experiences, learn that you're not alone. So I think that's so important. Like, my parents never knew anyone else with haemophilia. I think they just kind of managed alone. But that was, I guess, 30 years ago. We're living in a completely different time now.
And something also that you said about haemophilia being just the normal life for you. And I'd say for us also, Leonard is our first kid and only one so far. And so for us also, it's completely normal. The medical side is very good with the body. We know that. We're fixing the body. When I think haemophilia is a lot also about the mind, there's some improvement that could be done on helping you to understand what haemophilia would do to you as a parent, but also, I'm sure, to the kids. So there's obviously some room here to have a better understanding of the impact on the couple, on the parenting, on the stress level.
And I think it's only more recently that we've had that kind of focus on that aspect of things. And that's certainly changed in my lifetime. And it's really exciting to see where it's going. But I still think the focus is very much on the person with haemophilia, and like you were saying, there needs to be so much more support for everyone else around that person, like parents, siblings, partners. Affects everyone around. Okay, so I guess at the start, where did you find the most support? Was it, we talked about you weren't really ready to kind of access the community straight away. Was it through charities? Was it through patient associations? Was it through the kind of haemophilia care professionals? Was it through your family?
What helped me was talking to professionals, to people that knew haemophilia by heart. And they weren't my doctor, or at least my son's doctor. So they had a very different relationship with me and talking the truth. And also that they had an understanding of what we were going through. And because talking with your friends and all, they were like, this is bad, but what else can they say? And so that was a big help. And that's where we also understood that we could really reach to the community, that they were ready to listen, that they were amazed by the project. You meet those people, they've been in the industry, but in haemophilia for for 30 years. They look at you and they say, wow, this is super cool. And this gives you some fuel to carry on. And really, that's where, I really managed to build something around it, some positive momentum around haemophilia, and we switched from having a negative impact on my life, on my freedom, and being scared for my son, from having a very positive, and then, taking our lives the way we wanted it. So, and also that's where I really got into reading a lot of studies. I got out of the den, and I said, okay, it's time to really learn, try to reach out, be open-minded. And that, the change was fantastic.
Obviously, the community and the medical team were really helpful, but the world tour we were working on with Paul was a chance for us, because we could finally talk about haemophilia together. And for me, this is the most important thing, because the year after the diagnosis, I was really looking for this kind of conversation with my husband, but he was not ready to talk about it with me or to talk about it with anyone. And building a project together created the opportunity to see haemophilia in a positive way and see the bright side of haemophilia and finally talk about it together. So for me, it was a beautiful key to reconnect. But it takes time.
What about you, Rich? How did things evolved? I mean, what's the difference between back in the days? You're not that old, we are the same age, and today?
I think it's so different, Luke. It's 30 years, and you know, the kind of the rapid development of haemophilia care and what it means to have haemophilia is completely different. I think you're looking back, when I was a kid, it was very much about, you have haemophilia, therefore you cannot do these things. Whereas now it's about, you have haemophilia, you want to do these things, here's how we can make that possible. And I think that's one of the big culture shifts. And yeah, it's really exciting to see. And I think the other thing is just the range of different treatments that were available, and the different types of treatment and how they work. Now there's such a huge marketplace of different things, to suit different lifestyles, to suit different people's personal bodies and biologies and how they live their lives. And so now you can really kind of choose a treatment strategy that works for you. And it's much more personalized care. So I'd say those are the two main changes.
And what about resources?
Yeah, like when I was a kid, the internet didn't exist. And now you can go on like Twitter and find stuff about haemophilia. You can go on Facebook and there are groups. You can go on Reddit and there's haemophilia stuff there. You have access to all these kind of scientific articles that are being published that you can read as a patient. Yeah, that was just kind of completely different to my youth with haemophilia. And I guess that meant that when I was a kid, when I was a teenager, it just meant that I didn't want to have any interest in haemophilia because there was no way to have an interest, like, outside of being at the hospital. Whereas now it's so easy to access all that information and find out a lot more. There's YouTube videos and things. So there's one that I think has just been produced as part of the Liberate Life platform about a guy with haemophilia that wants to get tattoos. That's something that, again, like we were saying earlier, it's all these kind of normal aspects of life. And I think your resources like that kind of really normalize these different aspects of life that aren't to do with bleeding, but obviously are impacted by it. I think that's been really, really empowering.
And what services or resources will be good to have access to in the future?
I think the kind of continuing ability to speak to other people with haemophilia is so important, just to have those different conversations. Because as well, you can realise that the kind of treatment that you're getting at your centre might be very different to what your friend's getting, and that you can share experiences and even about health and fitness. It's really empowering for me to learn from guys that are maybe a few years younger than me about how they cope with going to the gym and their haemophilia, because that was something I was never allowed to do. So it's still a kind of something I'm learning about, and I think more resources like that would be really exciting. I think the digital stuff is really cool, because we all live in a digital world, and being able to have all the haemophilia stuff online and follow you around, as someone that travels quite a lot for work and pleasure and has also moved around and moved different centre, it's really challenging to kind of bring with you all that wealth of expertise and information and history about your haemophilia when you move. So to be able to have kind of everything on your phone about your haemophilia, so that if you are ever somewhere and you need to convey that information, you have it with you. So I guess for you guys, do you think it's important to have role models within the community? What would you say makes a good role model for haemophilia?
It will be nice to see other parents as role models to exchange with them. It will be also nice to have different type of role models for haemophilia. Sportive one, but maybe someone who doesn't do sports. Every kid can identify to one or another. Because It's not an obligation to become really sportive if you are hemophiliac, if you have hemophilia. I mean, so.
I really liked what Axel was saying about how, you know, we need role models within the community that aren't just these kind of like Olympic level athletes and pro sports. I think, you know, because there's been this focus in hemophilia of like sport has been this thing that like the holy grail of things that we've not been allowed to do for so long, that there's been this push to be like, oh look, now you can look at all these people. But you know, if you're not sporty by inclination, like I'm not, you know, how much of that is because I was never allowed to be as a kid, you know, it's obviously, you know, nature or nurture, who knows. But it's still like those kind of role models don't connect with me. If anything, it kind of makes me sad because like that's something I can't do. You know, I don't have an interest in doing. And it's all that stuff in the middle, just like that every day, the kind of really normal, mundane kind of stuff that you don't even think about doing, that I think is really important. Like all the questions Axel had at the start about like, you know, how does it affect traveling? How does it affect relationships? Things like that, like are things that we haven't necessarily talked about as much within the community, because there has been, like Paul said, this historic focus on the medical aspects. And it's only now that we're really beginning to get into the more kind of psychosocial aspects of hemophilia.
This brings us to the end of our discussion for now.
Thank you for tuning into our podcast and listening to our story.
And join us again next time.
Bye-bye.